Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for us to have a little bit of insight and analysis, if we're lucky, into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Rosemary Armeo, investigative reporter and professor of journalism at University of Albany. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello, how are you?
And here is Dr. Alan Shartok, who sounds miraculously as though he's sitting right here. Alan?
Yeah, that's always a problem.
That's right. Always right. He's not sitting right here, actually, but it's okay. Through the miracles of radio technology, it's as though Alan is present, you know, sort of a voice coming to us over the airwaves from somewhere off in the deep distance.
And don't forget that, Rex.
And don't forget that. Absolutely. Here we are. So it's a good time for summing up. You know, a new year begins and an old year is gone. Time for us to think about what has happened in journalism. If there are troubling trends, encouraging trends, things that you think are might get better if we're lucky in 2017. Rosemary, you have any thoughts on off the top of your head for the starter?
Well, I hate to bring it up, but I think we have to talk about the election once again if we're going to take a look back and look at what has happened with journalism. We were bashed badly by Donald Trump, who's the incoming president. And in the year ahead, I think we're going to have to do a lot of damage control and rebuilding. I hope the election will mean a surge in investigative reporting and in fact-checking and in reminding readers and listeners that evidence and proof are required for all stories. It's not just what you think.
You think, Alan, that's going to happen? Are we going to be able to turn a corner, let's say, in that regard?
Look, I think this is going to depend. What happens to the press from now on, once Trump becomes the president, is going to be a question of what he does in his presidency. In other words, if he has some very right-wing people in his cabinet, and if in fact he has a tough Homeland Security group, and if in fact he pushes the FBI, which is under some question here, and whether we get a model that tends more towards fascism than towards democracy, then it's going to be up to the major news outlets to really do what Rosemary just said, which is to do investigative reporting and not to run scared. But if all of a sudden people start going to jail, if there are ways in which the press is repressed, and I suspect that's what's going to happen, then the word courage is going to really mean something.
If I can add on to what Alan said, I totally agree with him. The second most troubling development in the past year, I think, was that Gawker case. It was a First Amendment case brought against a online, mostly online publication that did a really awful story about Hulk Hogan's sex life, and it ran a sex tape. It was not, as all First Amendment cases of import are, it was not something that most of us want to read about. But the First Amendment doesn't distinguish between good news and interesting, sordid news. And a billionaire backer went against the publication, Gawker, and won, and basically ended the publication. The cost of litigating was so expensive that it went out of business. And I believe when you have a president who's saying we want to soften the libel rules, this is the way he's going to do it. He's not going to do legislation. He's not going to try a constitutional amendment. He's going to simply back any publication that writes something he doesn't like into a courtroom and outspend them. And we're seeing that already in a Maryland courtroom where his wife, Melania Trump, was vilified in his view by a just a nothing newspaper, a nothing little rag. should have been ignored. And instead, she appeared in public. The case has gotten a lot of press, and I think it's part of an onslaught that we're going to see. We have to fight back against that.
The difficulty of trying to sustain some value in the minds of citizens, what we call the reporting of verification, the kind of journalism that we do, when it has now been shown by none other than the president-elect that you can go around the media
yes.
and reach people if your voice is loud enough and shrill enough that folks will believe what they're told and mistrust what is actually reporting and fact-based work. Is very difficult. I think it becomes almost a public relations job,
yes.
doesn't it,
yes.
for the news media? And I don't know how you can, it's very difficult to figure out how to do that when you have the arrayed voices of the new White House vociferously attacking the media at all times. I don't know how you rebuild the image of a news media that is, in fact, committed to trying to get it right, even though we make mistakes and don't do everything as well as we should have. But how do you get the people back on track to thinking that there is value in independent media?
I know in Eastern Europe, where media have been under that kind of assault for decades now, you don't try to do media relations. You don't try to win people over. You just do your job. You go out and write these stories and you get it on the record. And so one encouraging sign is that the Washington Post, under another billionaire who has the money to compete on this scale, Jeff Bezos, has announced that they're hiring 5 dozen new employees, not all reporters, but some of them will be investigative reporters, a new team. That's I haven't heard that good news since the 90s. And that's a good sign that we are taking this seriously. Some media are taking this seriously.
Well, that is the good news from this. And that's not just at the Post. You know, subscriptions at the Times have surged. 132,000 new subscriptions at the Times in the 18 days after the election, which is 10 times more than the same period a year ago. The LA Times, Wall Street Journal also have had record growth in subscriptions. The new subscriptions to the Post have grown by 75%. So there is some booming in the national, in the big media publications. I just don't know if that's enough to offset the declines elsewhere.
At the risk of alienating Rosemary, which I would never want to do.
No.
There's one caveat that I think is really important here, and that is that the media has to be extremely vigilant about what it does itself. Yeah, Rosemary, you're right that the First Amendment is the First Amendment. The problem here is that when you do something that the American people sitting in their homes think is despicable, as in the Hulk Hogan case, you are, in fact, weakening the fabric of the First Amendment and of the news media. So that while I don't like saying it, I do think it's important that the news media knows that it is not so that anything goes.
So beg to differ. What is the use of having a First Amendment if you're going to gauge public opinion on what they want and give that to them? You might as well just stick with cable TV for that. No, thank you.
But you're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say that. What I said was that you have to be extremely careful. It's not a matter of what people want. It's a matter of what's right. We can all project ourselves into a situation where somebody lies about us, and then they hide behind the First Amendment. I'm just simply saying, if you really want to win this fight, and I agree with both of you that this is a tough time, if you really want to win it, you got to be damn sure that you're being fair in your reporting.
Yeah, the problem, of course, is that in the vast majority of the cases involving the public affairs journalism that we're dealing with, the media are fair, the reporting is accurate, and notwithstanding that, we are vilified and attacked by the people who are the targets of the reporting, who are saying that, you know, it's the doublespeak that is best represented, of course, and it's now an old story, by the slogan of Fox News. Fox News, the only network that was created with a specific political bias implicit in its charter, and yet claims fair and balanced. Fox News is intentionally right-wing reporting, but it, or what we used to call right-wing, it's now, the term has been stretched by the likes of Breitbart. And so the term has been taken over, fair and balanced, they say, when that's not in fact the case. And so we can't allow that kind of doublespeak. The problem is if you're telling the truth in your reporting even, you still can be attacked for it. And that's fine.
You're right, Rex. It isn't the media under attack so much by the incoming administration. It's truth. Climate change isn't real. Yeah, 99% of scientists said that, but, you know, what do they know? I feel differently. And your feelings now take the place of empirical, provable fact. Evidence is now being called into question. You run some ridiculous fake story on the internet and try to convince someone who wants to believe it that it is not true. Mm. Who do you cite? The Washington Post? Oh, don't quote the mainstream media to me. Mm-hmm. An expert in China who knows more about the topic than anybody in the world. Oh, he's Canadian. He doesn't care about us. You can dispute any evidence if you really have this point of view that what I feel is the truth to me no matter what you say. That's very dangerous.
And in the echo chamber of social media, the feelings, as you're saying, is reinforced more than independent reporting, more than truth.
Right.
Alan?
Well, while I agree with both of you on the major thrust of the discussion, I will stick with what I'm saying, that it is important that we do our jobs, that we do it well, and that we don't make stuff up. You know, there are cases in which that happens, and every time it happens, there is going to be pushback, and they're going to say, you see? But you're absolutely right, Rosemary. When you think about it, somebody with billions of dollars says, okay, I'll sue you. I'll hire a cadre of people. I don't care even if I win. You'll have to spend so much money defending yourself that you won't be able to do your jobs. That's really scary.
To me, when the threat is that blatant, and I believe it is, why be careful? When you can say anything innocent and be sued, why not be bold and go after the big stories? Why isn't the press looking at election rigging? Why isn't it looking at interference by the Russians? Go after the stories that will most offend and hurt. Those are the ones worth getting.
Absolutely. What do you do about the public response, though? If is it going to be significant? The New York Times did this interesting story about the little newspaper in Oklahoma, the Enid News and Eagle, which is right next to the Oklahoma-Kansas state line, a community of 52,000 people where the 10,000 circulation print paper ran an editorial, first time in modern history, and endorsing Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. That is the case in many, many newspapers across the country. There was only one major newspaper that endorsed Donald Trump, the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And in Enid, Oklahoma, this has been greatly problematic for the newspaper, a small paper losing 162 subscribers and a whole lot of advertisers, the attacks on the journalists there. What happens when a newspaper fulfilling what it considers to be its responsibility doesn't get the support or sort of takes a stand against what its readers like?
Principled stand.
Well, that's what courage is all about. I mean, when we say people have to have courage and newspapers have to have courage, we mean it. But courage obviously means you have to worry about whether you'll get fired. You have to worry about whether your advertisers will leave you. You have to worry about whether there'll be a newspaper or not. Now, to me, I'm so old now, I remember Joe McCarthy and all of that, and I remember very well the people who had courage during that time and said, I don't give a damn whether they send me to jail. It's still worth doing and doing well.
Well, you're right, and I applaud that, but it also is more than courage. It's a matter of money. And so I asked both of you, how many calls have we gotten since the election saying, what can we do to help? Here's something you can do to help. You don't have to live in Oklahoma to be a subscriber to this newspaper. You can go online. It's actually, I've done this, it's kind of expensive. It's close to $200 a year to support a subscription. But they also take donations, so you can make it as little or as much as you can. Contribute to this newspaper and say, thanks for standing up for the First Amendment, for principles.
And I got another idea, which is buy an ad. If they're losing ads, buy an ad. Congratulations to the Oklahoma from
great.
Rosemary Armeo, professor of journalism. This is great. Take a quarter of a page. That's
like
a great idea.
I was going to send a donation. I like that better.
Yeah, buy a little ad.
I'll call back.
Excellent idea. Yeah, of course, we all at our respective publications would similarly accept donations. WAMC, I think, accepts money, doesn't it, Alan? Don't you take donations to support your journalism? I've heard that.
Indeed we do.
What do you know?
Indeed we do.
And of course,
and
the
one
Times
of the things
Union, we're happy to do that as well. Times Union loves getting support from advertisers and readers. And we have gotten, you know, we had our own chapter in this when our editorial board decided that it was a good idea to take a stand urging the Electoral College not to support Donald Trump, notwithstanding the fact that we knew that that was a voice in the wilderness. And of course, we lost a good number of subscribers and gained some as well. So,
you know, this is an interesting phenomenon in American journalism that despite the image we like to have of ourselves, we have not really often been in the lead on important social justice matters. The one exception that I know of was the abolitionists, who called for the end of slavery long before we were able to politically or go to war to solve the issue. In most other cases, we've done sort of, Alan, what you asked for, to kind of gauge the public reaction and then not offend them too much.
By the way, again, you keep trying to put words in my mouth. I didn't say that the public have to be followed. Not at all. I happen to think you don't do the wrong thing because the people out there in the public understand that there are limitations on what should happen in the name of fairness. Now, cut it out, will you, Rosemary?
Yeah, just cut it out, Rosemary. There we go. That's likely. But we do remember the exceptions. You know, in the South, during the controversy over civil rights early in the 20th century,
there were a few
key players.
In Atlanta.
Exactly. And so those people are lionized because they stood up. And I think there are bound to be exceptions. And in the political spheres of influence in Washington, you could really say that the Watergate coverage of the Washington Post distinguished it because, remember, there were threats coming from the White House. Quite significant, from the former attorney general to the president, people saying this threat to the license that the Washington Post held and broadcast outlets and to the existence of the newspaper itself. So there have been times, many times, when the media has stood up, but we remember those because they are
so unusual. Hmm. Yes. The Washington Post has a column today by, I've forgotten his first name, Dion.
EJ, you mean?
Yes, of course. Sorry, senior moment. And he was trying to take the traditional upbeat attitude that you have at the end of the year and looking at what good we can expect from a Trump presidency. And one of them is that the threat seems so great to liberals and to the established institutions like the media that there will be an organized and spirited response and monitoring of the government like we have not seen in a while. And that is not a bad thing.
If that is the case, that's trivia. You know, it would be really smart if there is some intelligent way of marshaling the forces of social media to attack fake news, to stand up and to stand up in support of serious reporting. There may be a way that we haven't yet conceived of that we'll be talking about a year from now as being a great moment for the media that some smart people have come up with in saying, you know, here is a, for example, I'm making this up, but the guy who is going to be in charge of the EPA is a climate change denier. Right. What if when there are these fake accounts disputing climate change, there is
Absolutely.
Some sort of a smart social media response, not just mainstream media, that figures out a way to do that. I don't know what that would be.
Well, I know what it would be. It would be a new app called the Lying App. And every time somebody tells a lie, you know, the app blinks on your phone and says, somebody somewhere is telling a lie. You know, the trolls are out there. Rosemary's been having a couple of fights with some of the trolls who write to us. And it doesn't matter. Don't convince me with the fact. In fact, respond to everybody with a polite thank you.
Yeah, I try to.
No matter.
It's true. It's just so maddening. Alan, I know who you're referring to. I mean, it's so crazy that one guy is arguing with me that I have consistently criticize Hillary Clinton while praising Donald Trump. It's like, do you listen to the show? And it just simply goes right over his head. No. At the other hand, though, to try to eliminate trolls and fake news is perilously close to censorship.
Yes.
And I don't know that I want the organizers of Facebook and Twitter to be deciding what's news and what's not. That worries me, too. I used to trust the American people and readers and listeners to know the difference. Now I'm a little foggy on the whole thing.
One of the reasons for that, Rosemary and Rex, is that Trump has basically unleashed a very unpleasant part of the American populi and what they say. I have to tell you, when somebody writes me a letter and says you should have been cremated in the ovens like the other Jews were, that's stuff I wasn't getting before. But I'm getting now, and I suspect it has to do with, and by the way, I don't think to this day Trump has apologized for Palladino and his remarks, former gubernatorial candidate in New York. And so what's happening is the signal's out there, go ahead, do your best.
And I have had some people who say to me, specifically with regard to Carl Palladino, for example, who said these despicable things about the president and the first lady, wishing that Obama catches mad cow disease after being caught having relations with a Hereford and so on. I have had people who say to me, why do you people publicize that? Why do you report about that? Why don't you just ignore it? You know, ignoring that kind of thing is not the answer. Not reporting the news is not a way to deal with this. It is a difficult dilemma when, as you say, Alan, the conversation has turned into a direction that we never would have expected, that it wouldn't have been considered appropriate.
That's interesting. They're calling on you to ignore what an elected school board official has said, in the same way that much of the voting population ignored what the many horrible things that Trump said and just said, oh, just tell me the important things he's talking about.
But that is
so they are
what
calling
how could you do
censor.
It?
Yeah, they're calling for us to censor. That's dangerous.
Right.
How
saying,
could you do it? I mean, think about this just for a second. Guy ran for governor against Cuomo. You're telling me a guy who might want to run for governor again, and we hear that, by the way, has said these despicable things, that the American people shouldn't know about that? It's beyond belief.
But when we're told that by the president-elect's aides that we shouldn't take his words so specifically,
literally.
So literally, you should know that he's speaking symbolically, and therefore you don't bother covering the, I mean, the press overreacts to his tweets where he makes these statements. This is kind of a dangerous suggestion, and we really need to resist that. We need to apply, as this is what Rosemary said at the top, we need to apply the standards that have been fundamental going forward with even more energy. Difficult as that is, because it's going to be very unpopular with a segment of people who have supported some of those who are now going to be in charge in the political establishment, and it's going to be unpopular with some of our listeners and readers.
I'd like to think about Watergate, which at the time, 1972, when the Washington Post was printing these horrible revelations about constitutional assaults by Richard Nixon, he was put back into office by the American people by the biggest margin at that time ever. It was only because the reporting led to investigations by political bodies that Nixon was removed. And that's what I keep thinking now. Get it on the record, document conflicts of interest, document some of the really bad things that we are expecting unhappily, and then wait for other institutions to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, by the way, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I would say, you know, in terms of courage, you know, I've had my problems with the New York Times. I really have. And there are some things they do that I don't like. However, I have to say, I think that newspaper has a lot of courage and has really been showing it in the run-up to the new presidency. I take my hat off to them.
Well, I think you're right. And this is one of the interesting developments. The big media, that is what might be considered national media, as we said before, the New York Times and the Washington Post, and certainly NPR is thriving these days, it seems to me, and is looking for great radio producers. You know, if you know of any, pass that along. The good news is that the serious national reporting is there. The question is, will there be enough support to continue to sustain local journalism and the investigative reporting and watchdog reporting at the local and state level that has been imperiled by the shift in the media landscape?
And to say the least, not to say the least, there's no question that when we've been talking about it for program after program, the newspaper industry itself is under real financial constraints right now. And so at a time when we really need them more than ever, you know, you got to figure out how to survive. So that's difficult.
Yeah. So we continue, and we will hope that a year from now we're looking at peace and goodness and a thriving press and all that kind of good stuff. I don't know. How do you end up a year and begin a new one? It's going to be a difficult year ahead.
We need a nap, a long nap.
A long nap.
Yeah.
There's not an app for that. There's a nap for that. Yeah, let it go.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, that would be the wrap-up. It's the Media Project. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith. We welcome your comments at media@wamc.org. Let us know what you think. And we wish you all a great 2017. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on the Media Project.
Standing. They all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.